fifth market specialist was able to tell me the absolute lowest rent they've ever rented in a particular neighborhood within a certain parameter. And that number was great. It was within $50 of what they were telling me. And even if I got the lowest number, that'd be a great return, terrific results. And then the other thing about having people applying and teed up and lined up to rent your properties right away, just because that marketplace is so huge and so many people, that just gives you a sense of confidence that you're going to have a very good cash flowing property without a great deal of risk that it's going to sit vacant for a month or 2 months and that sort of thing.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to episode number 1080, episode 1080. This is your host, Jason Hartman, coming to you from an absolutely stunning and gorgeous location here at the Beach House Restaurant in Kauai. We're having our Venture Alliance Mastermind lunch for the second day of Venture Alliance. And I'm here with one of our members. You've heard him on the show before, Patrick Donahoe. Pat, say hello.
Hello, everyone.
And you have a little guest with us today. We are working on some child tax deductions, aren't we?
Yeah, my four-year-old is right here. His name's Jack, and he's along for the ride this week.
I think Jack should say something on the mic.
Say hello.
Hello.
Hey, that's pretty cute. I don't think we've ever had a four-year-old on the show.
That's the first for everything.
Yeah, that's cool. We have a 10th episode show today, and we've got Dr. Gina Loudon on. And very appropriately, given that we just had an election yesterday, the midterms, we are going to talk a little bit about mad politics in a world gone crazy. And I think a lot of people, regardless of what side of the political aisle they're on, feel that way, and rightfully so. It's a pretty crazy time for sure. I don't know that the election is going to have any huge significance for real estate investors. Pat, any thoughts on it?
Not yet. I mean, I think it really was just it was the idea of shifting power with, the House and the Senate. I don't know if there were any big surprises, right? But the markets were up big time today. So I think it's all positive if you think about it.
Yeah, really, I agree. And I think we're just going to see the new tax law play out and continue to play out. And we talked about that a lot yesterday in the Venture Alliance Mastermind meeting and over the weekend at Profits in Paradise, and how there will be a continuing, there already is, a shift from the high tax, high regulatory states and high cost of living states because of the SALT deduction limit, the state and local tax, SALT, limits of $10,000 per year, which is a pretty big deal if you're making a little bit of money and you live in New York or California or any other places like that.
You eat through that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, $10,000 ain't nothing, right?
No, it's not. I mean, it's one of those things where I think, in the tax law, there's a lot of benefits to real estate investors. I think Trump, in a sense, helped influence just some jabs at some of the people that aren't supporting him. And that's where I think the local, local people in New York City, as well as, in California and so forth, where, they weren't really supportive of him at all. And so it was kind of a jab of saying, okay, well, hey, I'm going to, limit your deduction, the primary deductions that you get.
Yeah, no, I'd say that's true. And they're pretty angry about that, definitely. But ultimately, it's a fair thing. I mean, you want to get out of these high tax places if you can, And, it may be a long-term plan. It may be a 5 or 10 year plan. I mean, for me to get out of Orange County, California, and the 13.3% California tax, I was just fed up with paying, and all the other high costs of living there, it took years for me to plan that and do it, and there's a lot to it. This is not something you do overnight. Maybe you're sitting there listening, and you think, hey, Jason, this doesn't apply to me. Over the course of many years, it's just a shift ultimately. But
If you think about it, I mean, Tom Wheelwright talks about this all the time, where there's thousands and thousands of pages that in the tax code that teach you how to not pay taxes. And, you know, I brought my family out here because we usually try to spend, you know, a week during the fall and somewhere nice when it's starting to get cold in Utah. And, you know, bringing my kids out here, involving them to some degree, having, you know, some of the meetings that I need to have yearly with my wife because she's a partner in some of the entities that I own. And, you know, there's a huge tax deduction associated with being able to go on vacation. But, you know, there's other instances, too, where you can definitely leverage tax strategy. And because it's coming up, you know, the end of the year is coming up, there's, you know, a lot of things you can still do before the end of the year if you have a really good tax advisor.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've had some really good ones on the show. And we will, you know what, that's a good point. I'll make it a point to get another couple of CPAs on before year end. We'll talk about year end tax planning for real estate investors especially. But Pat, you know, before we get to our 10th show guest today and a couple of other announcements, we've got 23 people here at the Venture Alliance Mastermind. They're all having lunch here inside. We ordered. Our food's probably going to be done soon. We would be remiss if we did not describe. And I'm just looking around here. We're on a grassy patch here on this sort of lanai that, I mean, there's people snorkeling over. This is gorgeous.
People surfing. You got some bodyboarding going on. Ton of people snorkeling. It's beautiful.
This is incredible. I mean, help me describe the scene here.
Well, I mean, this is your, you know, stereotypical definition of paradise. I mean, you are very, you know, adamant about going to places that are amazing and beautiful, and obviously this is no exception. Yeah, you look at the palm trees in the air, you look at the blue water and the beach, and man, it's perfect weather.
You know what Hawaii is like and why I wanted to do this Profits in Paradise event that we did last weekend and then the Venture Alliance Mastermind retreat here immediately following it is because Hawaii is this type of place, you know, of course you don't want to live here because it's outrageous in so many ways and so forth. But whenever I come here to visit, and I've been many times, this is like whenever you've edited a photograph, right? And you turn up the saturation on the photo, all the colors are saturated here. The water is so blue. The white part on the waves is so white. The grass is so green. The palm trees are so green. All the flowers are so colorful. It's really gorgeous.
No, it's incredible. I mean, Hawaii, I'd never been anywhere really growing up, and we've come out to Hawaii at least, you know, half a dozen times so far, and it's just, I don't know, it takes your breath away every time.
One of the things I said, Carmen and I were sitting out at the Grand Hyatt when we first got here on Monday, and we recorded the intro for that episode. We were sitting out there, and I said something I said a long time ago to the listeners when I was in Peru on a mastermind trip there, and we stayed in this incredible hotel. I mean, it was just amazing. You know, they had not only bathrobes in the closet, but they had two of each for male and female, and it was just a spectacular place, you know, amazing. And the Grand Hyatt Resort where we're staying is...
No, it's you know, these are places, yeah, the Grand Hyatt, we stayed there, you know, 6 years ago, and it's remarkable just how beautiful that place is. But I think it's one of those things that you guys are probably listening to the show saying, well, I can't afford that, or that's for more successful people. The people that come to this and, you know, the experiences that they have, what they talk about, what we get to talk about together, the return on investment is incredible, right? What you learn about business, what you learn about, you know, investing. I think right now there's a lot of malinvestment going on just because there's a lot of liquidity, not too many deals. And so you got to be careful of people that are pitching you deals. And if you don't know how to run numbers or do proper due diligence, then you're going to get taken advantage of. So it's interesting that we've heard a couple of those experiences being here. And that teaches you, you know, it teaches you as an investor to ask better questions, to do better due diligence, you know, include a group in helping you determine whether you should invest in this or that or the other. You look at the return coming here, it's a net, it's kind of like you're paid to come here, right? Most people think it's a big expense. It's a huge investment, and you get a big return on that investment.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. One of the things I wanted to say about that, and let's just talk about a couple of the things that were shared yesterday and today. I think the listeners will really get some real value out of that. But here's the thing I said on Monday, and I said it before when I was in Peru. Folks, you know, if you're listening to this and you haven't quite taken care of this one giant part of your life yet, it's the money thing. Take care of the money thing. Look, I grew up poor. I did not like being poor. When I got to about ninth grade, I really started understanding money and why it's just, you're just going to have a better life if you have a few bucks. You know, take care of the money thing. Like, just get it taken care of, because money's always going to be an issue for you, whether you're rich or poor. It's just a lot more comfortable when you've got some, yeah, and you don't have to stress about these little decisions about this expense and that expense, and you can just, you know, it really lowers your stress. Yeah. to take care of the money thing. So that's one of the points. You know, look, at my whole goal is to create an army of empowered investors who are doing direct investment, who know how, even if they don't want to necessarily self-manage their properties, but they know how to do it, so that they are empowered and people can't pull the wool over their eyes and can't take advantage of them. So that's important. Take care of the money thing. Let's just give the listeners a little insight into a couple of the things that were shared today. I learned a ton this morning. I learned a lot yesterday as well with our various mastermind members who shared things. We started off the morning talking about some biohacking stuff that was pretty interesting. Yeah. Electrical radiation, and one of our members, Keith, who will never be on the podcast because he's
a... I tried to get him to come on mine, too. Yeah, it's like, it's hard. It's super hard. He's a really private guy.
He's a low-key guy. But Keith, very successful, pulled out his radiation meter and went around the room to all of our phones and all of the outlets in the wall and the lights and the thing, and showed us how much radiation our bodies are being exposed to. And he showed us how he had a shield for it and all kinds of stuff. Comments on Keith, and then we'll talk about some of the more financial presentations.
Yeah, I mean, there's a spectrum, right, of maintaining your body and maintaining, you know, your awareness and your experience of life. Keith is on kind of the extreme side of that spectrum.
He's extreme.
But I love listening to him. I love talking to him because it always gives you ideas so that you can, you know, as you're experiencing this, you don't want to experience this sick, or you don't want to, you know, experience it with no energy, right? There's lots of ways that you can, you know, improve the health, and it's the whole cliche, you know, health is the first wealth.
Health is the first wealth. I like that.
Yeah, and it's one of those, if you can't experience it, you know, with a high level of energy, then it kind of defeats the purpose of the experience in the first place.
Yeah, no question. And then we talked both yesterday and today a lot about asset protection. One of our Profits in Paradise speakers, Scott, came over to the retreat here in Kauai with us from Honolulu. I mean, we took a deep dive into asset protection both yesterday and today, and just how you can make a whole plan and how you can use entities and structuring to really, really make a difference in your life. And it applies to estate planning, of course, as well. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many ways to skin that cat. And there's lots of different perspectives on what type of entity structure you should have. But regardless, you know, it's still painful for me to think about all the things we have to go through to protect our
assets. It's a pain, but you got to do it.
You got to do it because it's one little slip up, one little blip could take the whole house of cards down, right? And so it's, you know, really maintaining a good structure as far as your businesses are concerned and trying to separate, you know, yourself as an individual from your assets. I liked Scott. I mean, what he said, it made sense, and it, you know, it comes down to the fact that there's no real 100% bulletproof asset protection strategy. It just comes down to, you know, providing different barriers so that it frustrates any type of creditor that would come after you so that you can, you know, negotiate and ultimately settle. But, you know, I like it because it's a structure that, to me, it made sense. And the best part, it doesn't cost as much as other more sophisticated structures are.
Yeah, that was good. And then we had some presentations on some probably bad deals. We had a presentation from one of our members who made three bad deals. Those were actually real estate deals, not through our network, thankfully, but they were outside. But we talked about that, and we're trying to dig in and help him solve some of those problems. And then we had a couple of them that presented business opportunities. And, you know, it's just really good to run these things by a group of people who are seeing different things than we are. You know, we all have our own blindness, our own myopia, you know, or is that how you say it? Myopia. Yeah. So we're all myopic to some extent because we can't get out of our own way, out of our own heads, right? And that's why a mastermind group's so valuable, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, I think we're all emotional creatures in a sense, and every decision has a degree of emotion. And when you're investing, right, you want to gain, and so there's an element of greed there. But sometimes that can blind you from asking the right questions, from trusting the wrong people, because in your mind, you want the end result, and you're willing to kind of skip steps to actually get to that end result. And that's where
we all do it, even the best of us.
For sure, and that's where, you know, I've seen thousands of deals over the years. And in the end, there's never going to be an investment opportunity that starts with, I'm probably going to lose your money. They all want to make money for you. They all want you to, you know, become rich. But at the same time, a lot of deals just don't work out. And some actually are complete fraud. In the end, it's having this kind of non-biased party, third-party perspective that allows you to ask those questions and either talk you into it or talk you out of it.
Yeah, yeah, good stuff. Well, hey, we're going a little long here. We got to get to our guest today. It's a 10th show, so we talk about a topic of general interest, not specifically real estate investing, more about general life and success and society and so forth. So that's what we're going to do today. I wanted to say be sure to go and enter our contest. We're going to wrap up this contest for the Ring doorbell or the Amazon Echo here pretty shortly. So go to jasonhartman.com/contest. And by the way, thank you all for your great comments. You have the opportunity, it's optional, to leave some comments in when you enter our contest. And so we love those. They're great comments, questions. We talk about them on the show and we'll continue to do that. But that's jasonhartman.com/contest. And Pat, hey, thanks for joining me.
Hey, it was a pleasure, Jason, always.
It's always great to have you on. And let's get to our guest. It's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Gina Loudon to the show. She is a Trump campaign advisor and member of his 2020 Advisory Council. She's host of the TV show America Trends, author of Ladies and Gentlemen, Why the Survival of Our Republic Depends on the Revival of Honor, and her new book, Mad Politics, Keeping Your Sanity in a World Gone Crazy. And she's got another book as well. Gina, welcome. How are you?
I am doing great. Thank you. My show is actually every day on Newsmax from 12 to 3, and it's called America Talks Live. Just an update since the last time I was on your show. So I hope people will join me there.
Good stuff. Tell us about your latest book, Mad Politics. I mean, probably everyone listening would agree that politics has become a little mad, hasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly has. And I think, you know, a lot of times we take a really close look at what's happening either politically or economically on the national and international level, but we forget to talk about the why of what is happening, because mm-hmm. that's what really is interesting. And that's what makes economic cycles and that's what makes political cycles predictable. It's looking at where we've been historically, it's looking at where we are, and it's looking at how we got there and why we got there. What were people thinking? What's different about how people are thinking right now than how people were thinking a year ago, 5 years ago, 100 years ago? Mm. And so the psychology is often sort of left out of the conversation. And really, that's my background. It's really important to inject it once in a while so that all of this makes a little bit more sense contextually.
Okay, good. Well, unpack that if you would. It sounds fascinating.
If you take just today, you know, people say, oh my gosh, politics is crazy. It's so divisive. It's this, it's that. And in some ways they're right. But in other ways, it's more of an appearance of crazy. There's a very small minority that's very vocal and very well paid by George Soros who do seem to be taking our politics to a fever pitch of crazy. But again, it's a very small amount of people. You know, just the other day, I watched the Kavanaugh confirmation vote from the West Wing of the White House with some of the comms team there. As you mentioned, I serve on the President's Media Advisory Board. And afterwards, I decided I would walk over and see what I was seeing on TV, see all of these crazy, crazy protesters. And when I looked for them, I realized, first of all, there weren't many. There was a small nucleus of protesters there, surrounded by people who were protesting the protesters in favor of Kavanaugh, actually. But when you watch television, all you were seeing was this massive crowd of what looked like protesters, because the vantage point they had was from inside that small nucleus of very vocal, kind of crazy protesters.
Right.
So I think it's really important to take a look at everything contextually, and we ask ourselves, why is the media portraying, even some of the more conservative media was portraying this as a massive protest against Kavanaugh. But the question is why? Why would they do that?
Right.
And again, we look at the psychology here, and I think it's very important to say, you know, news has changed. We've become a clickbait media world. And I incorporated an entire chapter in my book. About clickbait media and why that has played so much into what we think we see on television that may not be true reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very good points, Gina. And, you know, just to put it in context, at the beginning of our talk today, you mentioned how things were 100 years ago, what people thought back then. Let me tell you, folks, things were divisive throughout history. When you look at the history of the U.S., the history of the world, I mean, it's not like we're so divided now necessarily even. I mean, there were vociferous, violent arguments in the past. I mean, read some of these old editorials in the newspapers, you know, from the olden days. And is it really any different now? Is it just sensationalized differently, you know?
Well, it's sensationalized and we're seeing it. Instead of seeing a picture, of it drawn in ink and put in a newspaper, we're seeing it splashed across our television. Instead of news being broadcast from bureaus with very few live shots from the actual action, we've all become citizen journalists. So there's very little that isn't transferred onto social media, and we see it all, and the news media gets a hold of it and they go haywire with it. Also, there's very little accountability to journalists, and I would count myself in that. I'm a commentator. I'm not a journalist, right, per se, even though I did study communications in my background. The majority of my study was in psychology, as I mentioned, and the majority of my life has been spent as a very outspoken conservative, and I don't hide from that. But I think the danger is when news media outlets do hide from that reality that they do have an opinion. And I think perhaps we all have opinions. Maybe we should just admit that and just all give our perspective, because I don't believe whether you take the most rock solid traditional journalist from the 1970s, you know, whoever you want to, whatever name you want to come up with, they still had opinions. They were still partisan in their own way. Most people make a decision when you deal with politics every single day, one side or the other, or perhaps choosing neither side. But nonetheless, I think we should be more honest and transparent about that. Right. I also think that a lot of transparency has been demanded. I think that this president is particularly transparent, and he's caused the American people to expect more transparency. So I suspect we'll see more of that forthcoming. But I think the thing that's important to note here, and I say this very clearly in Mad Politics, no, you're not crazy in all likelihood. I happen to think that the world does seem crazy. You're not imagining it. It's true. It's a clickbait media. But two, I believe we have one of the most sound-minded people occupying the White House right now in our nation's history. And I said that on Sean Hannity's
It's interesting that he's been so vilified, and it's just crazy what's going on. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I said it on Sean Hannity's show a couple of weeks ago, and Sean said liberal heads are going to explode and they're going to come after you with pitchforks, practically.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened right after that. They actually accosted my ratings on Amazon for my book, Mad Politics, and made it so that nobody could rate the book anymore. I went down from 5 stars to 3 stars, and they froze the stars there. And it's been sort of a saga ever since then, simply because I said that I think the president is safe.
But Gina, aren't those the tolerant, open-minded, accepting liberals? That's how they claim to be.
Right, they do, but they're not. They're only tolerant of their own ideas,
right,
and we know that now. But, you know, I was contrasting my book at that point on John's show with a book by Mr. Woodward that had come out the same week. And in the book by Woodward, he declares the president completely mentally incompetent, if not fully insane. On the one hand, he has zero background in mental health, where I have 3 postgraduate degrees and an undergrad in psychology. My 3 postgraduate degrees are in varying fields of human behavior as well. I happen to know the president and his family. In an interview I did with Lara Trump just the other day at Trump Tower, she made the point that she's never even met Mr. Woodward, and yet he writes a lot about the Trump family and their derangement, when maybe it's the flip case of that. And I can say this based on sound school philosophy, that's not too white, if you will. Things like this president has endured more scorn and ridicule and constant firing at him and his family, and has managed to have 1 major 6 hours on average. And that's with zero help, my friends, from the mainstream media, the Democrats certainly, and even in many cases from his own party. So to be that productive would be highly, highly unusual for anyone suffering from any sort of mental deficiency. As most of us know, who've ever known anyone with a mental deficiency, their number one problem, you see, they lay in bed, they can't function well, they don't focus well in social situations and all the rest.
Love or hate what he's doing, he's getting a lot done.
Precisely.
Yeah, no question about it. Yeah, those are just ridiculous comments. I mean, look at, and you know, I must say, I'm not a huge Trump fan, but I have said all along he's going to be great for the economy, and that prediction came true 100%. But what almost makes me want to support him more is this vile just venom from the left. And it's so illogical, it's so ridiculous, and it's so unfounded. I mean, I was talking with one of my liberal friends recently, and she was saying to me, well, don't you care about the country? And I said, well, what's wrong with the country? I mean, explain it to me. She had nothing. She doesn't even know what she's talking about. She just said, but what about the country? Well, what about it? The economy is booming. Unemployment is the lowest it's been in 49 years. Americans, blue-collar Americans, have had their first real dollar wage increase in 41 years. GDP has skyrocketed. Jobs are coming back to America. We're not in a thousand wars. What exactly is so wrong with the country? She had no idea. She had nothing to say.
And you make a great point that, you know, we are actually living in the most healthy, happy, prosperous, trouble-free, safe times, and not in just American history, but in world history. So I think it's sad that we don't take time to really stop and just enjoy that, right? I mean, why, when we are living in such prosperous times, are we being sold this bill of goods that we should somehow be desperate and sad and divided? No. I tell people, take time to stop and smell the roses. You know, even if you didn't vote for this president, no doubt you've contributed to this economy in your own ways. Stop and enjoy it, for crying out loud. These are the best times of our lives, the best times of any human beings living in any place, any time in history. We should be enjoying this. And so I really do encourage my readers in Mad Politics to do exactly that and to share in some of that with their friends, because I think that's a really important thing. If we don't stop to enjoy it, then what the heck are we working so hard for?
Absolutely, no question about it. Gina, I want to go back to what you're talking about your chapter in the book on clickbait politics. Explain to the listeners, if you will, just what is clickbait and how do you mean it in the political arena? The way the media landscape has changed with the internet is truly mind-boggling. And I have commented a lot about how we are all becoming more like ourselves, because never before has advertising and media of every type, advertorial, you know, a true editorial, been targeted at us. It follows us now. You know, maybe before we used to read a liberal or a conservative newspaper because that's what we believed and liked. But nowadays, it literally seeks us out. It stalks us. The ideas that are like what we already believe, because the profiling is so good and scary at the same time nowadays, that we're just becoming more like ourselves, right? Every belief we have is just reinforced over and over again. That's never happened in history before.
Right. Well, if you were a millionaire or billionaire in the 1970s, for example, you could buy yourself a newspaper or buy yourself a network or a local television station, and you could put out whatever you want. And you knew that you were going to get a certain amount of subscribers because there weren't that many competitors. And you knew that you were going to get a certain amount of eyeballs on your evening news program every single night because, hey, there were only three major networks and only one or two local affiliates. So there really wasn't the competition there is now with the advent of the internet and the citizen journalist. So that has provided for such a level of competition that salacious headlines became the only way to get eyeballs on your television or your newspaper. As a result, especially leftist-leaning networks and newspapers, sales were vastly diminished. We hear all the time how the ratings on the national networks that are left-leaning are plummeting. The newspapers are closing down, laying people off, because now there's so much more competition with the advent of the internet and the citizen journalist and social media.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's the problem. And so to get you, you're right. They stalk you. They write things that aren't true. That's what clickbait means. Literally, you're like a fish on the end of that hook, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to snag you, and they're going to follow you around, and they're going to go to where you hang out, and they're going to, you know, get your information from places that they probably shouldn't if they can buy a list here or there and the rest of it. And so, yes, we have to be very aware that a lot of, you know, if there's not, you know, we all know the term, if it bleeds, it leads. If there's not controversy, it's not going to sell. So they're not going to write about how great these economic times are and say, hey, why don't you go have an extra glass of wine and take a vacation? They're not. They want to sell you the newspaper. They want to attract your eyeballs to their network. And so they're going to say whatever it takes to make you stop and click. or turn the channel onto them. Mm-hmm. And that has become much more of an art form than it ever used to be.
Right. No question about it. The other thing that's interesting, and I wrote an article about this maybe 14 years ago. Well, no, more than that, about 16 years ago, actually. And it was the concept I call the monologue media versus the dialogue media. And what's so interesting about that is that we have seen examples over and over again of how the left, they cannot withstand the scrutiny of debate, whether it be on the campus of Berkeley or any other college campus in the country or any media channel. And if you think about it, all of the old media that is dying out, as you say, is the left-leaning media that is a monologue. It's book publishing, it's newspapers, it's old-fashioned television, where they tell the story and we get to listen. Yet the dialogue media, talk radio and the blogosphere, is controlled more so by the right. And my argument is that it's because those ideas can withstand debate. On talk radio, you can call and you can argue with Rush Limbaugh. You can't do that with NBC, right? You can't do that with the New York Times. I mean, yes, they have an op-ed page, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's nothing, though. Any thoughts about that monologue versus dialogue media concept?
Well, I think it's interesting. I find it interesting that most of the conservative talk show hosts who had trimmed their monologue to allow for more dialogue have now actually gone back to the long format of monologues. If you look at Sean Hannity's show, for example, now his monologue lasts 20 minutes. That mm-hmm. time used to be spent with a political panel, if you'll remember, and even he had his mm-hmm. town hall meetings.
Yeah.
So the demand for media that agrees with us has increased, and we want to hear more of our ideas reflected.
Because we're becoming more like ourselves, yeah.
Because we're becoming more like ourselves, yeah. Exactly as you said. But I think it's important to note that, and I write about this in Mad Politics as well, there are three sorts of people in this world, and I cite the source of that, and I can't think of it off the top of my head, but three types of people. There are those who want to control people, there are those who want to be controlled, and then there are those who want nothing to do with either of those two items, that we don't want to control anyone and we don't want to be controlled. Mm-hmm. So we are the normal people out here who cannot understand for the life of ourselves why in the world you would want to control anyone and why you would want to be controlled.
Right.
But the job of those who want to control others, and this is critical,
mm-hmm.
the job of those who want to control others is to increase the size pool of those who want to be controlled. So we saw it when slavery happened. You know, they had to continue to increase the number of slaves that they could control so that they could keep the numbers of people who believed and subscribed to that heinous theory of slavery. Now we see it again. We see the people who are out there pounding on the Supreme Court doors, wearing pink hats designed as genitalia on our national
disgusting
mall.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. We see this over and over again. We see it, of course, even within the swamp. You know, what the Federal Reserve has done, what they did under Obama, contrasted but with what they've done under President Trump, most of us smell a rat when we look at that. Yet we understand what's going on. So you look at those who want to control and those who want to be controlled, and you look at things like illegal immigration, which is a hot topic for the day. Those who want to control people need more illegals in the country to vote for them because they're not going to have their bearings. They're not going to understand American constitutional governance, and they're more likely to vote for someone who's going to give them free stuff because they're going to be in a hurry to realize the American dream and not realize that actually, when you get free stuff, you're enslaved, right? Mm-hmm. Basic economic principle that most Americans understand.
Right.
People from a second or third world country yeah. who came here illegally are not going to understand that. And those who want to control others are counting on illegal immigrants' inability to understand that
mm-hmm.
and willingness to be enslaved for their votes and their power and their money that will go straight into the pockets of those who want to control people. They can't get Americans to vote for them. So what do? They import foreign votes. And that's a lot of what we're seeing right now in our culture. And that's the reason why, for example, in the Kavanaugh hearings, you know, we thought that was about maybe what, abortion? Is that what we thought? We thought this was a moral issue? No. This mm-hmm. was never that. This was an economic issue. This is about the money that goes into Democrat coffers. $1.5 million of taxpayer funded money, regardless of how you feel about abortion. From an economic standpoint, this is an affront to taxpayers who don't pay any other private company. We're not forced to pay any other private company $1.5 million every single day of taxpayer funds, but we are forced to pay that to Planned Parenthood. Democrats didn't want to lose that. They want to hold on to that money, or they know their party is imploding quickly. So that's what the Kavanaugh confirmation was really about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Crazy stuff. It's really crazy. Okay, so any other points you want to make before you go? Questions I didn't ask you, just you take it.
I want to give people assurance that I watched this president. I've seen him in the White House. I've seen him at Mar-a-Lago. I happen to live in Palm Beach, and I am a member of Mar-a-Lago, so I see him from time to time here as well. Not from time to time. I mean, during the season when he's here, he's here. And I see him many weekends, most weekends. And I've gotten to know he and his family very well. I've traveled a little bit with his family and gotten to know them even better, members of his family. And I just want to assure people that whether or not you like his tactics, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, beginning of this segment.
He's not the most likable guy. I can see why people wouldn't like him because
disagree with you on that.
It's okay.
Because I know him personally, and I'm fine disagreeing with you on that as well. I can see that some of his tactics maybe aren't the more Midwestern or genteel or however you want to call it. He's a New Yorker. He doesn't hide from that. He's a straight talker. He's a counterpuncher. People may not like that, but I can tell you he is one of the kindest, most compassionate, loving, loyal people you could ever know in your life. I always say if he has any faults, one, he's too honest, and two, he's too loyal. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If that's how I go down in history, is too honest and too loyal,
you'll take
I'll, take those. I'll take those as faults. And I know him very well. I know people driving in his motorcade, he'll pull his car over here in Palm Beach and he'll take people holding signs out to lunch. He'll a guy with a bike that's broken along the side of the road, he'll be the one that stops the limousine and gives the guy $500 and says, go buy yourself a new bike. I know numerous families that he's put their children through school. And, and there's no mention of this ever in the media.
Right, of course not.
So,
yeah.
To say he's not likable, I really think if every American could know him, like I've had the blessing and opportunity to get to know him. And mind you, I worked to elect him without knowing him. I got to know him after he was elected.
Right.
But I can assure you, if you knew him, you would love him. To know this man is to love him. And I really believe that if every American could just know him the way that I know him and his family, they are a very lovable, compassionate group of people. And I just want to reassure Americans that that's who they have at the helm right now, in addition to his fabulous policies that even you who don't like him admit you like his policies and they are renewing America.
In all fairness, I shouldn't say I don't like him. Look, when I was 24 years old, I read his book, The Art of the Deal, and I wanted to be a big real estate mogul like Donald Trump. So I do like him. I can just see why he's thought of as not likable. I mean, he says some pretty outlandish stuff, and that may be part of his genius. I will freely admit that. That works. I mean, look at the success of his campaign. It was incredible. He spent hardly any money on advertising, yet he got all that free media play. That was genius. Love him or hate him, it's genius. It was incredible.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. No, he does do a great job with that. He's a master marketer, in addition to being a good businessman. And he's also a great storyteller. And I have a feeling that I think for the rest of American history and really for the rest of world history, Donald Trump is going to be a story people are going to want to tell. And we are going to be among the most blessed in all of history to have been alive during the Trump administration. So I just encourage people to go out and get a copy of my book, Mad Politics. I do dissect and break down the psychology, his family birth order, his personality type, and other things that I think make him who he is. Mm-hmm. And I want to reassure people with this book. And I also want to teach them how to love the people that disagree with him. There's also a chapter in this book on that, as well as my own personal journey into the realm that has become this presidency. So.
It's really interesting that you have such an amazing background in psychology and then talking about that in the political arena. Fascinating stuff. Gina, give out your website.
Yeah, my website is drginalouden.com. I think it is drginashow.com. I think we'll also get you there. My book is available on Amazon and anywhere fine books are sold. And I would especially love your audiences to try to review my book on Amazon if they can. Amazon has to shut it down periodically because the left has orchestrated such an organized campaign against my book. They do not want my message out there, which is all the more reason why it needs to be out there.
Well, and we didn't even mention that the founder of Amazon obviously did a very concerted attack against Trump with his Washington Post reporters. So, there are enemies all over the place, but enemies of free speech everywhere. Okay, well, Gina, thank you so much for joining us. And folks, go check it out and check out her website as well. And thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.